Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston.
ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Saltgrass Steakhouse in Sugarland. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack. Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back.
What up, H-Town? How about deja vu all over again? You go from the Quentin Demp Show with Barry and Joel to just Barry and Joel. And I know for a lot of you, you feel like that's lacking, and that it's not quite the same oomph, but this is the low-T version of what was the Quentin Demp Show, so we continue to rhyme and flow and bring you everything. You come in on a Tuesday after not talking right after a game on Sunday with the Monday show, so I guess start off by giving me your impressions, now that Q took off, just a big win against Indy when they needed it most.
Yeah, suffice it to say, there was not much hope in my eyes for this team going into Indianapolis, playing the way that they've played. But all credit where credit is due. They played well, mm-hmm. For the most part. I think I did kind of a good news, bad news thing after the game. And really, I think the biggest problem still is the passing game. They ran the ball. Their defense, they got plenty of pressure on Luck. Secondary played well, other than the kid they just signed off the practice squad, Nelson. But overall, I mean, it was a good win and a big win for this team. And there's hope in the running game. But still, I watched the game again this morning. And over, I'm making the same note. Brock throws into triple coverage, throws into double coverage, throws the underthrew Fuller on that deep ball at the in second half. It's just it's one of those recurring themes that I don't know at this far into the season if things are ever going to change. I mean, he continues to throw bad balls at receivers who are covered.
Yeah, you know, and as I watched it, and I had a lot of the same sentiments you had, and a lot of people were tweeting us during the game, and I'm looking at it going, we had talked all year about how, for some taboo reason, the label game manager has been bad, but for the Texans, that's great. It's all they need.
At
if the defense
point.
Is playing the way they're playing, the running game, I said at one point, keep running the ball with Miller and Hunt and Blue until they stop it. And when they start trying to key on it and stop it, run it again. Because guess what? As long as he's not throwing picks and he's not putting you in a bad spot, your special teams was phenomenal at pinning them back. You were moving the football. And on the other side of the ball, from back to front, front to back, the defense was stepping up, playing good football. You could win games that way, and that's what they need to do. Take everything out. Take all of the chances for mistakes out of the equation to play the safest game possible to get the outcome that you want. I think that's what they got to do.
Yeah, you know, although I'll say this, I would be a game at this point. A game manager would be a step up.
Yeah,
I really believe that.
Yep.
But I think what you saw this past Sunday was more of a game manager type performance from Brock, in that he had some good throws. That throw where he hit Fedorowicz on the 1 yard line after a turnover,
mm-hmm.
That was a good throw. And so he had his moments where, you know, he had some out routes to Fuller and these other guys, and I thought that was good. And he didn't turn the ball over a lot, but part of that was Luck. He had that throw into triple coverage.
Look at the
red
zone goal line where the guy's got it hit him in a bad spot, right between the left and right hand, and I'm going, oh man, that would have been just a swift kick in the grapes right there.
Yeah, 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 and that's he got lucky there, and so yeah, he had bad throws, and he managed the game well overall. But when you see 147 yards from an NFL quarterback and you see five red zone possessions, one touchdown.
And the key was
That's a game manager, and you got to be better than that.
The key was the two turnovers. Yeah. You get the two turnovers in the red zone,
yeah,
and you can't get it inside the six. Both times you get it to the six, you got to settle for field goals. Those are game changers if you turn them into seven. Now 2-for-1 because two big turnovers only equates to 6 points. A touchdown trumps that if you're Indy and you're going. And I literally said it on Twitter. I go, here's where we're running in the fourth quarter into the really tough area of you just settled for another field goal, mm-hmm, which means the Colts are going to go down and score, and then with 5 minutes to play, it's going to be up in the air, and you run the risk of Andrew Luck putting a drive together,
yeah,
to break your heart. And all the people are like, you jinxed it, and here it comes. And if not for a bad call on 4th-and-1,
yeah,
I could legitimately see that playing out.
Yeah, thank goodness that was a horrible play call, and Wilfork got pressure on Luck and kind of forced him into a bad throw, yep, to begin with. It's funny, though, because you say all that, and for the second week in a row, when you look at what this offense did statistically, they matched their opponent. Now, does that speak for how inept the offense is or how good this Texans defense is playing? Because you look at Luck, he had a 47 QBR. That's horrible.
That is horrible.
And yeah, Osweiler had a QBR of 64, but I don't think you take the performance from either of those guys. I mean, Luck with the two interceptions, he had two touchdowns. Brock, again, not finding the end zone, did throw an interception. But, yeah, again, the running game is the teeth this offense. They won time of possession.
Yep.
And so that's those things where if you're not going to be prolific, then you just have to not shoot yourselves in the foot. And that's what they did to win.
I said in that first half, take away the pick.
It was a badly thrown ball, too.
It was awful. But you take that pick away, and from an entire team perspective, it might have been the most complete half of football they played in over a month.
Yeah.
So you had that to build on. And in the first half, they had 94 yards rushing. The Colts had 55, in which 33 was a scramble by Luck.
Yeah.
So the defense was playing all world. They were doing their job. You're running the football, and 100 yards in the first half is pretty much the benchmark for having a successful day running the football. As much as you want people to say, get off Brock, turn the page, stop doing it, it's a glaring problem, yeah, every single week.
Yeah, it is the only thing. There's other nitpicking things,
sure,
I suppose.
But even special teams played good.
Yeah. I mean, what else are you going to pick on about this performance from the Texans other than Brock in the passing game? And, again, to Keenan's point last week and a couple of weeks ago, some of it is on Brock, but some of it is on these receivers, and they're not getting open. You know, you're not seeing much separation. There were times where it looks like Brock made the wrong read, went to the wrong guy.
Right.
I can remember at one point, I think Griffin flashed over the middle and he dumps it down. But that's going to happen. I mean, he's still a young QB. But you want to start to see some progress, and it's just not there. And it sounds like a broken record. And I'm tired of coming in every week, every day, talking about how inept this passing game is. But it's not changing.
No, that's the problem I have. I mean, if I am the layman with obviously a little bit more interest than most, but watching these games and saying, hey, I'm seeing him stare down receivers week in, week out, and you look at the pick that should have been made that wasn't,
yeah,
you look at the bad pick in the first half and several other instances when it's not changing. It seems like something where a coach or someone can say, Brock, the reason why they're getting a jump on the ball, you're throwing picks, they're all over your primary receiver is, you're tipping your hat, you're looking right at him. I don't know what's going on, but it's not changing, and that's where the frustration lies. You're right. We get to sound like a broken record, but when you watch the tape and you rewind games like we do,
yep,
you see it over and over again, and suddenly people in their big chair on a Sunday just kicking it go, man, he didn't even look another direction to go to the guy that he threw to. No wonder it got picked off.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, like, I go through and I watch the game, and then I watch it again, and I make notes, and I highlight points of each drive, and over the same thing, threw into triple coverage. It's just like, dude, at some point, you got to start making better decisions with the ball.
No question.
I mean, that's what all of this comes down to. He still is wildly inaccurate through the middle of the field and downfield.
Out routes. He threw, yeah, one really good out route to Fuller, and I thought, where is that on a frequent basis?
Yeah.
And the fact that that's what it leaves you with. Every single time he does a good thing, it's not, that a boy, Brock. It's, Why don't we see that more often? Why can't you just do that on a consistent basis? Because that's all you need.
Yeah.
Well, we know one thing. We're very appreciative of you guys tuning us in every day, Monday through Friday, 1 to 4, here on ESPN 97.5. We are here till 4 o'clock today. We are at Saltgrass out here at 59 and 99 in Sugarland. Stop in and see us. If you missed the lunch specials, which are great, they have an early dinner special that's fantastic with a lot of food specials. There's happy hour prices at the bar. And also, you can pick up a Christmas gift card for those that are on your list. $50 gift card, you get $10 for yourself in a gift card as well. It's all the stuff you get by coming out to Saltgrass all across the city of Houston. Barry and I here till 4. Saltgrass Steakhouse, 59 and 99. Come out and see us.
ESPN
97.5.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Saltgrass Steakhouse in Sugarland. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack. Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel, Barry, and Nick behind the glass back at the station. We are at Saltgrass in Sugarland at 59 and 99 on the feeder road heading out of downtown. You can get the Saltgrass Steakhouse. You can't miss it. And once you're here, you are going to stay for a while because the food is fantastic. Barry and I have had our samples and our lunch, and I know that I am very satisfied, as always. Great chicken and shrimp platter that I had, and you had the chicken salad. How was that?
And the salad was delicious.
But you were thinking the whole time about the steak, weren't you?
I mean, listen, I would much rather eat a steak. Driving in, I saw a tweet from Raheel who was talking about getting it Pittsburgh style. You ever had a steak Pittsburgh style?
Can I just tell you that based on the kind of talk that you two guys have and some of the things that you brought up, I'm not even touching that. Because I know that based on my response, I could get killed a million different ways.
No! It's just a style.
If Pittsburgh style is anything like gay chicken, I'm out.
No, it's nothing like gay chicken.
Okay, but I'm just saying. You guys got some stuff that I don't know about.
No, it's apparently it's when it's charred on the outside, and then he said it's medium. It's cooked medium on the inside, and he said the best, it's ribeye is the best steak to do that on. And I was like, well, it sounds good, but I can only eat a ribeye medium rare. Like, otherwise, it just seems like a sin to eat a ribeye any other way. So he said, yeah, you can get a Pittsburgh style medium rare. So I wanted to try that, but like I said, when Q was here, I told my wife, let's eat salads all week and see if we lose any weight.
I was gonna see if there was a way in.
Not that she needs to lose any weight. It's
no,
really just me.
The before just, and after.
She's just doing it for moral support, but.
Well,
yeah,
but
not that you
ever look for things to kill me on. But at the same time, you always kill me because when I get a steak, I get it medium well to well.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good at all.
But I've also told you why.
Yeah, I know. I get it. I'm just saying, like,
so it's just an acquired taste.
Yeah, I guess, but it,
man,
you
I'm just saying,
there's certain things.
Old man has more cocktails in his belly than he does time to flip the burgers or steaks. You deal with well done.
Oh no, I get it. My mom used to make just well done steaks. That was it. But it's like, you know, there's certain things once you appreciate a good steak and one that's cooked rare to medium rare, then it's tough to go back. It's a preference thing. It's a preference thing. I get it.
I don't understand why you think the blood is so good.
I don't. That's just like how God intended steaks to be eaten, though. Like medium rare.
Yeah.
All
right.
So exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You see that?
I already looked at it. Yeah. We've got
this
a little graphic
the
on the
chart.
Phone on the steak chart.
Yeah. How it's done.
Medium
rare?
Well and well are ruined and
right.
What are you doing?
Exactly.
And that's me every
time. Yeah.
So. Your boy Trey is chiming in on Twitter.
Says it seems
like Texans quarterbacks follow receivers with their eyes is almost a trend. Schaub did it too. I just said that, you know, we pointed out from week in to week out that it doesn't stop. That's my problem. It can happen, but whether it's coaching or film room and you see it on yourself, you got to stop doing it because it's costing this team. And for as much as it from week to week, you can pick apart different weaknesses or shortcomings the team has had. They're starting to pick it up every single place in the lineup on both sides of the ball and special teams except for the quarterback position.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's a problem because you can win football games by being a game manager. But as you said, being a game manager with Brock Osweiler would be a step up from where he's been to this point. So
got a text from 936 that said, 936 that said, let's be honest here, Johnny Football would be a better QB. I don't know if I'm going to go that far.
But did you see that?
But
we were talking about in the break that during the Heisman ceremony that he was the guy, the most prominent Heisman winner behind Jackson when he got the trophy. Then what really disturbed me was they were Instagramming, tweeting out pictures of Jackson and Johnny Football sitting on a bed in a hotel room with the trophy between them, which sent up some concerns. But then you see that because of the ceremony and everything else that Carr sees him on TV, Derek Carr, and he says, you know, I was drafted after Johnny Football, and I worked out with him, and I went to the combine with him, and he was a good guy, and I know he can play. And so he reaches out to Johnny Football and says, hey, man, if you need someone and if you would let me, I want to befriend you and see if we can work with you because I hope you get a second chance. And very wisely, whether it was someone putting the response in his hands or on his keyboard or he did it himself, he accepted and they said they're going to connect. And basically, you just don't know whatever could have been of Johnny Football. You're very happy that the Texans never took him. But to your point, even now, I might see what he's got on kick the tires to say that he could be better than Brock.
Turn his mic off.
Could he not be better than Brock?
No.
That's where I am with Brock. I'm just done.
I don't know that he could be any worse.
So that's what I'm saying.
But I don't know that he would be better.
And he can run.
You know what it's going to be?
It's a bad
Johnny
thing to say on the show.
Case Keenum and VY, and I don't want to go down that path. There's other options that are out there for this team than to go that route if they have to make a change.
Would you rather talk about the fact that there's a quarterback controversy in Dallas now?
Is there?
Yeah, and I don't think there should be.
I don't think there should be. I don't think there is.
And Jason Garrett was quick to say Dak's not going anywhere, but then leave it to Jerry Jones, who came out and said, we will know when the time is right.
Yeah, and I think that's the media looking into things. I don't know that. I mean, that's probably the right thing to say because you don't want to commit one way or the other. It's just you'll know when the change needs to be made. And right now, you don't. The kids lost two games and not even back-to-back. There was like 11 games in between these two losses.
But you know it was inevitable.
Yeah, he's
a
rookie.
The minute that any little thing happened, they were going to start not only pointing fingers, but start looking for the bullpen to start warming up. And it's
true.
Sad because that adds an extra layer of pressure to a kid that doesn't need any more pressure.
That is all media-driven. I guarantee you. This kid is a rookie, and every once in a while he's going to play like a rookie. Hell, he might play like a rookie for the next three or four games. But that you can't take away from the fact from what he's done as opposed just having a bad stretch. As a rookie QB, I mean, the kid is still learning. It's like the complete opposite of Brock.
Oh yeah,
right. Like if Brock has 11 bad games and two good ones, you don't anoint him the next Joe Montana.
Yeah, I mean,
he had two good games. Okay, just the opposite for Dak. I mean, he's had two bad games.
The pitfalls have been less, and the success has been more than just about anybody in the league. The only thing that's going to hurt him for MVP is the fact that a guy on his own team, they're going to take votes from each other because Zeke has been so good in the backfield. But that team has put it all together, and after one game in really tough conditions, I don't want to say a fluke, but a fumble ends up setting it up. Look, the Giants won a game. It was a tight game, but don't go too far. I mean, it's a cakewalk to the division and the best record in the NFC, and you let the kid play it out because he's the reason why you got there. And if you let the other guy start the season, he wasn't hurt, and he would have done the same thing. I'm not sure the record would have been anywhere close.
Yeah.
So we got that out of the way. We're talking anything you want to talk about, and we haven't given you the information because we want you to be a part of the show. 713-780-ESPN. You can text us. You can call us. You can get in on the show. And then Barry checks the text messages on a pretty regular basis. You heard him bring in some text there. So the regulars know how to reach us. But 713-780-ESPN also gets you in on text. And if you want to tweet us, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, and at Barry is funny, as well as at No Hit Nick behind the glass back at the station. We are here till 4, ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Saltgrass Steakhouse in Sugarland. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack. Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Joel and Barry till 4 o'clock at Saltgrass Steakhouse in Sugarland at 59 Feeder Road right before 99. Come out and see us. People still enjoying some lunch here in the restaurant and getting ready for the dinner specials. They have special dinner menus that from 4 to 6 p.m. during the week, and you can get some pretty good food at a really good price and in and out before the dinner crowd. So check it out, Saltgrass Steakhouse here in Houston, Texas. Barry, we were talking Texans, we were talking about some other things before the break, and I wanted to get your take on another thing. The Rockets won again last night.
Yep.
And it was another game that they won, that they were, you know, another game you're supposed to take care of business and win, and they did. Although it was closer than it probably should have been. Again, because we didn't talk this weekend, you know, Demo gave me the inside scoop to break the fact that the Rockets were going to, quote-unquote, fail him on his physical, and it started to hold back and forth. Travis had some pretty heated words to say yesterday that's on, if you missed it, I just retweeted it. It's on Twitter.
Oh, y'all were squabbing with someone on Twitter?
No, just he was very passionate about the fact that he honestly believes organizationally they did Demo wrong and they're doing him wrong, and he thinks they're doing these things intentionally because he held out on the first physical, and that's just kind of like a track record for them. I had said, you know, bottom line is, will this affect them going forward? Because Pat Riley was the gold standard in terms of how he treats players until he, one, lashed out at LeBron after he left, and then, two, took a guy that was the face of the franchise in Dwayne Wade, who he said would retire a member of the Heat, and basically let him walk away in a money squab. And talking to guys in the league that said that changed everything for guys and agents when they look at Miami as a destination. Now, I'm sure the beach is going to have some way of luring him back in, but you wonder if and how much, you know, the underlying current is Demo venting. Because, I mean, look, he told me a lot of things, but a lot of things, too, are his side of the story.
We reached out
to the Rockets to see if they wanted to respond to it. They said at that time they didn't have any comment. They later sent out a message to ESPN National and said, we're still evaluating things on the physical to see what the next move is going to be, so we're continuing to weigh options. It's still in limbo. At this point, do you just want it to go away? Or are you to the point where we've talked about they don't have a low post scoring option at this point? Do you need Demo on this roster?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think you need a low post scoring option on a team that won. But, and I'll answer the question, but I have to get this out before I forget.
Okay.
But I saw a power ranking on CBS.
Number one.
Yeah.
Yep.
That surprised me a little bit.
You know, but it doesn't because of the record and because of what they've done
right
early.
Now.
But 14 of your first 20 are on the road, and you come out with that record?
Yeah.
That's being
saying
hot.
Something. But no, I don't think, because of the style of offense that this team runs, I don't think it requires a low post presence. I think you've got a guy in Capella that can play some D down low. The same with Nene. I think he comes in and gives you
I think Nene played good well
defense.
Last night.
Oh, very well.
Yep.
Had a big defensive stop down the stretch, along with Beverly and Ariza.
Yeah.
And that's the second time in two or three games that Beverly has come up with a big defensive
Oklahoma
stop.
Oklahoma City game was
yep.
huge on Westbrook.
Yep.
And I tweeted it last night, and I said this to you on the air. When Ariza and Beverly don't have to be counted on to be scorers,
yeah.
and they can start with defense first, and then just become spot-up shooters when need be on the kickout, when you can set your feet, keep your elbow in, no one's out there contesting, that's when they're at their best. And you saw it last night. You mentioned the two plays by Ariza and Beverly. Beverly's play in the Oklahoma City game. But getting back to what your response was to my initial question, the one thing I'll say is it makes the Rockets a really good regular season team. But I continually go back to the fact that the history of the playoffs in the NBA says it's going to become a half-court game. It's going to become a grind. It's going to be a pounded-out, knockdown, drag-out in a lot of ways. And that's where I think you need some form of low-post scoring when you got to get a two and you don't want to see one-on-one on the wing with Harden and four guys collapsing in the middle and saying, I dare you to try and get through four guys. I think at that point it's going to hurt them in a seven-game series trying to get offense strictly off the break and up-tempo and not getting any low-post scoring at all.
Well, see, and I guess I disagree. When you look at the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
the teams in the finals, the teams that are winning championships, the teams that are making deep runs, specifically the Golden State Warriors, they don't really have that dominant low post presence. They're doing it from the outside in.
But they have guys that can get the bucket for you on the low post when they need it.
Well, and the Rockets do too. I mean, they're like seventh or eighth in points in the paint, and it's because of that high pick
but
and
points
roll.
Points in the paint is also because of a lot of fast break points. When you get a fast break layup, that's considered 2 points in the paint.
No, I'm talking about from the pick and roll. This is a
high
team.
Pick and roll works well for that
this
team.
This is a team that's not designed to dump it down low
and
rely on a guy. And but that's
that
this
roster
offense.
Can't win that
and,
way.
And that's why I don't think this
but
offense
needs. But you reference Golden
it.
State and also San Antonio as a team in the playoffs.
But San Antonio has a low post presence.
I was going to say, and they do, and Golden State does too, because even when they go with that suicide lineup, Draymond Green can go on the low block and get you two. David West can go on the low block and get you a bucket or a foul. They have guys, Zsa Pachulia, for all you can say, who? At the same time, if you needed him to go down and make a move to try and draw a foul or get to the basket, he has the ability to do that.
But
I don't see that in the Rock. Clint Capella makes a majority of his points on putbacks, follows, and alley-oop dunks. Nene is on the downside. He likes to spot up and face the basket way more than he likes to get down on that block. I just want one guy for them in their rotation that can say, if the tempo changes and it does slow down a little bit, I know at least I got one option there.
I guess. It's just not, that's not what this team was built around. It's almost like it would be that oddity, right? And it's not something that they focus on. That's just not how this team is made. When you have a stretch four like Ryan Anderson, you're not worried about that, you know, and a center at 6'10 in Capella, then obviously low block play isn't a concern of yours because that's not what this offense revolves around. So to me, the fact that they are winning, that they did as well as they've done on the road, and that teams like Golden State, yeah, Draymond Green, but he's not a great low post presence. I mean, and not that Demo is going to be great either, but I think that you can win and with the style of play that they have without that guy down low, as long as you rebound. And that, well, to me, is okay. The key. If, you know, Ryan Anderson has been doing fairly well, Capella's done well, you've gotten good rebounding from your guards in both Harden and Beverly when he's been healthy. So as long as this team can rebound, to me, that's the big difference. They're blocking a few shots here and there, but you don't need that guy to dump it down. You don't need a Barkley.
So this is like us picking apart Brock. I'm picking apart an offense that right now is clicking on all cylinders.
Uh-huh.
But I'm telling you that when we get to the postseason, I'm taking the biggest weakness and saying you can't address it now so that you have an option on the low block. And I say that by saying, okay, you're going to get games when the threes just aren't falling.
Sure.
You know, you're going to get games when you just said when you need rebounds and because you're playing stretch fours and even stretch fives, you're going to be in a situation where you're not getting those boards and you're giving a team second chance opportunities. Having a guy, an experienced guy, that can fill a role on both ends of the floor, even in short spurts, can be the difference between winning and losing a seven-game series. Green doesn't have to be great all the time, but Green is a guy that can go down and get you buckets on the block, and then also, because of his defense, can play multiple positions, which gives you the ability to defend in the low post. And when you look at when Golden State's three isn't falling, the one thing that they make up for it on, rebounds and points in the paint, where they can normally get about a 15 or 20 point advantage because of all the fast break points as well as a couple of low post points.
Well, and so two things. One, I do agree that defensively it can cause some issues for you if you don't have a guy down low that if you know, if you face a San Antonio and Aldridge wants to put his back to the basket.
I.e. LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah, and he wants to put his back to the basket. Then you do have some issues, but I think that they can address those. And their mentality has never been, we're going to stop you. The mentality of the Rockets is, we'll just outscore you. We'll just outrun you, outscore you, wear you down. So, yeah, you can put in, you know, you can go big. You can go, you know, two seven-footers down low if you want. But I hope they can run, and that's their mentality. On the you know, when you talk about the three-point shot not falling, mm-hmm. I think the one thing that's given me hope thus far this year from this team that I've seen, mm-hmm. as opposed to in years past, is that this team looks like they get it in the fact that if their shot's not falling – and I'm talking about Corey Brewer. I've seen it now. You've seen it lately from Ryan Anderson as well. If that three-point shot's not falling, they take it to the basket. And that's been, to me, the difference as opposed to in years past where they just stand there and shoot. And no one bothered driving the lane. And at least they're creating contact and getting fouls and getting to the line as opposed to last year where
– And you're right. And I saw Anderson
20%.
Do that last night. But I want to go back to something you said just before that. Teams are going to look at this team in a seven-game series and say – and I understand what you're saying – about they better be able to run if they go 2 7-footers.
Yeah.
But if you get 2 7-footers, now in Golden State's case, you got a 7-footer that can play 5 positions on the floor in Kevin Durant defensively.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. But if you go big and you can dictate tempo at all, or because playoffs it does slow down a little bit, then you could find yourself in a point of weakness and a difficult situation that you can avoid right now by trying to figure out an option or two to give you better reads on low post scoring and low post defense. Because the other thing, when you go small, you're already losing rebounds. But if you put one or two guys that can both post up on the opponent's end, Decker, Anderson, yeah, I think Capella doesn't have enough sand in his shorts to hold his ground on the low block. He can block shots. Nene for short spurts. I just think that's what they're missing most.
Okay.
If you can get one more low post guy on defense that can also be your only low post or a good low post guy for spurts on offense, I think you got a better shot. I love what they're doing. I think it's been a very fun season to this point. And the key, as we both have said over and over again, they got to stay healthy because Gordon is so valuable right now. And I said he's the MVP and everybody laughed at me. Well, you expect what you're going to get from James Harden, but you didn't know what you were going to get from everybody else. Gordon has been huge. If he can just stay healthy and keep doing what he's doing.
He has been, and his role off the bench has been vital to the team's success thus far. And I tell you what, after the game last night, I saw his post-game interview who was it? Was it Craig?
Either Bull did it on the floor or it was Bart Ennis.
Yeah, it was Bart Ennis. And he talked a little bit about the game, but what I liked most about that was the fact that he said, we've got a lot of work to do.
I loved it,
This was an ugly game. It was messy. And he talked about it like it was a loss. And that's what I want to see. I want to see these guys thinking, you know what? Because they didn't play a great game last night.
No, they
should have blown that team out. They hung on for the win like a good team is supposed to do. But the fact that they came in and they weren't pleased with that kind of win is encouraging.
That was a huge takeaway because in years past, Dwight would have said, all that matters is we won.
Yep.
And they would have been defensive. But the fact that they can go right from the get-go, right after the game happens and says, hey, we erase that. And if you look at tweets from other guys on the team,
yep.
Hey, yes, it's a win, but we've got plenty to work on. We got to get back to work in the grind. And the fact that you also hear they like to go to practice every day, there's a togetherness on this team that's an X factor, like Q was talking about in the locker room, that people don't see in the media or see outside of their locker room, but they feel it. They have a confidence level because of it, and it's a good thing if you're a fan of basketball in Houston. Hey, he's Barry. I'm Joel. We're here till 4 o'clock. We're at Saltgrass at 59 and 99 out here in Sugar Land. Stop in and see us if you want. We have some great lunch specials wrapping up, but we got some great specials for early dinner if you want to stop in. But we will get back to much more of your interaction with us and keep it going till 4, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Saltgrass Steakhouse in Sugarland. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack. Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, Barry and Joel, till 4 o'clock with Nick behind the glass back at the studio. We are at Saltgrass at 59 and 99 in Sugarland. Stop in and see us. We had a great lunch crowd and a lot of great food being served. And again, tonight, the early dinner menu from 4 to 6 p.m. is to die for with lots of options and a quick way to get a great meal at a good price. Get in, get out, beat the dinner crowd, and keep it going on a school night. We have sampled, and we are pleased. You will be two. So we've talked a little Rockets.
Shout out real quick to Howard, right?
Yeah, Howard's a good dude.
Taking care of us. Talking football in between the breaks, keeping it going.
Like Dell, he's a Dolphin fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I said, how the hell did that happen? And he said, but 1 year, I guess when he was a kid, that was the last time they were in the Super Bowl, and he watched it. And he's been a Dolphin fan ever since, at which point I pointed out the fact that he's the jinx. Like, since he started rooting for them, they haven't made it to the Super Bowl. He's the jinx. I think that's obvious. So,
okay.
Yeah. Way to go. Howard, great service. Terrible fan. Yep. Terrible fan. You've ruined your team.
Howard, I thought he was going
to. Your bad.
What he normally does is I thought he was waiting for you to be in the other room, and then he just.
No.
He's like a Ginsu knife. He just slices and dices through a tomato after a soup can. But he waited, and he gave you more when you came out.
Yeah. This goes out over there. People hear this.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. His wife is listening. Uh-oh.
Wow.
Now she knows. She married a jinx. All right.
I'm sure that wasn't in the vows, but we were talking about the Rockets and the NBA in general. I was watching some games last night. I think for what everybody saw was Golden State's championship to lose. And they've been playing well. But to me, it seems like what's made it a fun season to this point, and it's just getting started, is the parody of I'm not anointing anyone. you know, I do believe the Cavs are like the only team in the East, maybe Toronto to some extent, but I just don't see a lot of teams in the East. But I see, as I've told you guys from the start, a deeper Clipper team. I think San Antonio and Popovich always find a way to be ready for the playoffs. You have Golden State already. And I think that the key here for the Rockets is, I go back to the Sonics teams, one of their last years in Seattle, where they got off to such a great hot start that by the time the season was over, they were faltering a little, but they had built up such a cushion that they had home field, home court in the first round. They set themselves up really well. Unfortunately, they faltered and they lost. But they could take a home court situation away from another team that may really need it, like a Memphis, to try and grind out a series with a seventh game on their floor. So I think that's going to – the ability to have some things shake up in the West, the Rockets are that team. Because I said all along I thought they were going to struggle to get in. But now sitting at four as we look at it today and expecting them to hover around there for the rest of the year, barring some catastrophic injuries or scenario, it really changes the entire landscape of the West. But I think the West, for the most part, why I don't think the Clippers or the Spurs are intimidated by the Warriors to say they don't think they can beat them.
No, I don't think anybody there's not that, like you said, there's not a team right now that is far and away – the cream of the crop, or the class of the NBA. I mean, obviously there are you know the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Cavs. Everyone looks at it and says, right. Well, that's probably the three best teams. But the fact that they're not running away with it, the fact that San Antonio's already lost four games at home, tells you that these teams are susceptible. The Rockets went on the road and beat the Warriors, not just beat the Warriors, but beat them at home and did it in overtime.
Double
overtime. These teams are susceptible, and none of these teams are untouchable.
And maybe
and I think that makes a big difference in the psyche of not just the teams that are, you know, chasing these guys, but those teams themselves. They look around and go, man, we're not as good maybe as we thought we were.
Maybe that's to the point that you were making earlier about low post. Now, if Golden State was doing it in a half court way, pounding it with two big hosses on the low block and the high post, and you know, dominating people with size, that people might say, that's going to be tough to go up against in the playoffs. But because it seems like everybody's playing similar styles and that there's no real one team that's really dumping it down on a regular basis, everybody's playing up-tempo, maybe that's why there is more parity. Maybe that's why there's more optimism with every team in the top three or four on both sides of the conferences thinking, hey, we could win this thing.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, it's equal footing, right? It used to be in this league, you got you a dominant center – you could pretty much guarantee you were going to be in the playoffs and that you might make a run in the playoffs with that dominant center. And now it's the opposite. Shooter, it's much easier to get a guy that can shoot the ball than it is to find that dominant seven-footer that can play down low. It's like an elite quarterback, right? Those are rare. They're hard to come by. But you put a bunch of shooters on the floor like the Rockets have done this year, and you get that team chemistry, and you've got a guy like Harden as a leader and an elite player in the league, and you can make some things happen. And I think that's what you're seeing. It's almost, you know, every league seems to be a copycat league, NBA included. And I think everyone looked at the Warriors and thought, well, we got to catch these guys. We've got to do something. And that's, I think, what you see the Rockets doing is playing Warriors ball and putting
small
guys out there.
Small ball has become the norm.
Yeah.
As opposed to your point, it used to be a big man's league.
Yep.
And you had Ewing and Olajuwon, and every team had a guy
Shaq.
That was above average. Shaq after those guys, and even with those guys to some extent. But you always had those upper echelon teams that had an Alonzo Mourning, that had a guy that could go down and intimidate you on one end and score on the other end down low, and you had to pound, and you knew it was going to be a war when you took on those guys. Now small ball dominates, and even if you don't have the coming together of four stars like you have in Golden State, you have teams that on a night-in, night-out basis feel like they can win because basically what this is one of those Rucker Park League games where you don't have to have lockdown defenders either. Everybody criticizes the Rockets don't play defense, but the fact of the matter is as long as Beverly and Ariza can concentrate on defense first and guys like Anderson, Gordon, and Harden are making shots, you become a very tough team to guard.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that Gordon is playing lights out defense, but he's playing better than what I expected. He's playing better than what I expected, and that's a bonus. And the fact that him and Anderson have both remained healthy has been a bonus. So, yeah.
Did it surprise you watching the game last night that Anderson's only averaging 10 points a game?
No, because
and he's shooting the ball like I think 20% better on the road.
Yeah, that surprised me more than anything. But if you've watched, you know, he's not shot the ball well.
Not at all. He struggled.
And he's starting to – I mean, hell, he's been blowing layups the last week.
And you made a great point. He had a three last night in the corner.
Passed it up.
Where he head and shoulder faked and went right to the basket trying to get to the old – actually a three-point play the old-fashioned way, but get two off the glass because I think he's got to – he's getting to the point where he's starting to question it. To the point where he knows he just needs a couple of easy buckets to maybe get him going.
And I think that that has a lot to do with coaching and the mentality that this staff has versus the mentality of the staffs in the past, in that they're it's okay. I mean, you heard last night on the telecast, I don't know if it was Bull or who was it that said it, but they said it's okay to pass up a three as long as you take the shot from the paint. They don't want any mid-range jumpers. So I think that they've preached that enough to where these guys are getting that. And if they find themselves in a slump from beyond the arc, they can drive the lane. And Anderson, as quick as he is, for as big as he is, he's probably has an advantage over most fours in driving to the hoop if he can get there and make the layup.
Which, yeah, they're all about layups and threes. The in-between, whether you say the lost art of the mid-range, well, it ain't going to be the newfound art movement coming up anytime soon in the Rockets offense. It's layups and threes. And so far, so good if you're Mike D'Antoni and company down at the Big Sequoia on LaBranch and Polk Street.
I don't know where it is at.
Want to tell you guys about something you can do this holiday season that can help spread unstoppable joy. And all you got to do is visit your Finish Line stores nationwide in the malls near you, several here in the Houston area when you're doing your Christmas shopping. For the fifth year, Finish Line, the premium athletic shoe and apparel retailer, has partnered with Special Olympics. There are over 5 million Special Olympic athletes competing every day in 170 countries worldwide, right here in your backyard as well. These inspiring and fierce competitors, they are defying stereotypes, breaking down barriers, and they are being included in great competition by building confidence. Shop at your local Finish Line store or online. Donate at checkout when you buy your Christmas gifts. And remember, it's the season of giving. You can take care of your family and you and yours if you feel like, hey, you got your health and you're in a very good situation. You've had maybe a tough year, but you're still plugging along. Think about those at Special Olympics who don't have to pay to participate because of people like you that back the program. Finish Line online or Finish Line at any one of your local malls up until December 24th are taking donations to make a difference and spread unstoppable joy this holiday season. Shop the latest styles, Nike, Adidas, Air Jordan, and your favorite brands, all at newly remodeled stores like the one in Pearland Town Center. Find a store closest to you at finishline.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.